Hi, it's Emily, the host and creator of The Modern Romantic. And I wanted to let you know about something you may not be aware of. And that is, sometimes during the episode, you hear us referring to someone in the chat or someone in the audience. And that is because we record via live stream. What that means is we have a live show. It streams on our social media platforms, which would be Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube right now. And we have a chat, and you can come and interact with us. And we ask the questions. You can interact with our guest. We comment and respond to comments. And it's a lot of fun, and it's a community, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. So come join us. We stream on Monday evenings with the occasional Sunday thrown in. Monday would be 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Mountain, 7 Central, and 8 Eastern. And Sunday is kind of a... it varies. You'll have to watch our social media. So come and join us. We'd love to see you there and have you be part of the show.
Hi, and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism with passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I'm here to remind you that your smile never goes out of fashion. Hi, I'm Trey, and I'm joined by my co-host that we are proud to hear today, Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I don't want to even introduce myself at all, but thank you. I'm just really excited because today we're here with Bella Kotek, and I want to just dive right in. So it's a true honor to have the immensely talented Bella Kotek with us today. She's an award-winning fashion, fine art, and portrait photographer. She also is an educator and has a lot of really great content and information to share. But her work transcends the ordinary. She dives into fantasy, realms of fairy tales, and the wonders of nature, which I love. So let's welcome the enchanting Bella Kotek. Thank you for coming.
Hello. Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an honor.
And happy Diwali.
Oh, yes. Happy Diwali. I've got my earrings in. Woo-hoo. For anybody who's watching.
I love those.
Those are so cool.
But yeah, happy Diwali, everybody.
Yeah, I feel a little underdressed now. But I love your earrings.
Also, I heard your cat just now meowing in the background. It's like it was like joining in as well.
Yeah, that's the podcast cat is Velvet, and she is behind me by the stairs yelling because I'm not paying attention to her. I'm talking to you. And that's life around here.
Well, we love cats.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. She's, she makes an appearance once in a while, so we might see her yet.
Amazing.
Bella, we were listening to a couple of your interviews previously, and you said that your photography really changed when your life picked up with it, when you picked up a camera. Can you take us back to that moment where you first picked up a camera and share kind of what sparked your love for that medium?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so my journey actually began over 10 years ago. And actually this November, 10 years ago, I was in Bali. And that's when I like really discovered my style in photography. So I was actually, it was quite funny that you bring that up because I was actually like feeling very nostalgic just yesterday going through a few things that, oh my God, it was literally like 10 years ago, like this time that I found my style. But I've been taking photos prior to that for about five or six years. And then what inspired me to pick up the camera was at that time I was doing architecture. So I was a young student. I was studying architecture because I hadn't found my, it wasn't so much that I hadn't found my path. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to do like fine art. I wanted to do fashion. And those were like the avenues of, you know, things that I was fascinated by at that time. And my family was like, nope, you need to go to university, like be a lawyer, be a doctor, like we want to be something, you know, that they felt would serve me better in the long term. And I picked up architecture because it literally had the letters A-R-T, art.
Oh, yes.
And that was like my little way of like rebelling against my family, because I was like, I will still do art. You will not be able to take it out of me, but I will do the texture for you guys. So I felt like it was like a little compromise that I'd made. And but it was the best, you know how they say, like, no decision, like your path just unfolds how it's meant to unfold. So if I was meant to do something, I would have done it. And it just happened that this happened, and that's okay too, because in hindsight, I learned so much from that, the way my life unfolded in that way. By doing architecture, so many of the ethos that I learned in architecture fuel my art that I create now. And I came back to fine art anyway, like I was meant to. So yeah, I picked up the camera because for my course, I needed to learn how to use Photoshop. And it was just like one of the many programs that I needed to learn. And at that time, there just were not as many resources as there are now. And so one of the things I was doing was going on Flickr and like finding stock photography on Flickr and then cutting out people and then putting them in the designs I was making. Yeah, which is, not legal. You're not really, so you're not supposed to do that. But at that time, the internet landscape was a little bit hazy. But while on Flickr, I discovered that there was a group of young people and they were all doing the 365 project. And it looked interesting, it looked exciting. They were using Photoshop heavily in some of like some artists to like realize concepts and ideas. And I was just enthralled. I was like, you can do that. And so I thought, well, let me join this project because so many of the artists. So many of the artists were sharing how, look at like my day one compared to my day 200, and like look at how far I've come. And seeing that made me think, well, if they can go from one to such a huge jump in skill set from day one to day 200 or day one to day even 100, I could do that. So that was my inspiration. I picked up a camera to take pictures of myself that I would then Photoshop the heck out of. Because I wanted to like improve my skills in Photoshop, and then upload them onto social media, and slowly but surely, like tentatively join in that community that I found so exciting and interesting. And I just like wanted to meet all these people, and I thought, oh, like maybe this could be a way that I could meet them through taking pictures. And then the reason why I was able to even evolve was because so many people were being so nice. Like they were sharing, this is great. And I look back at those pictures and I'm like, this is not great. I'm like, they're like, this is amazing. And I'm like looking back at those pictures going, oh Lord, oh no. But that is like the power of support. And it kept me going and it kept me motivated. And then, as everything in my life unfolded and as things shifted, and as I felt lost and drift in many, many, many things later, the main thread through it all was that I was taking pictures and I was sharing them, and that people were being supportive and I felt and motivating me to still keep taking pictures and still keep sharing them. And I was finding myself through it. And then that's where we are. So that's how that journey unfolded.
That is amazing. And I love that people were so supportive of that. We see so many posts about how social media can be not supportive, but then when you find that like niche of people who are just like your tribe, that you just got to latch onto that. And it sounds like you really did.
Yeah, because that is kindness. Because so many people were being kind, and when you're being kind, it really heals something within people that you don't even know what they're going through. And like this thing, like that, having being the recipient of so much of that kindness. Yeah, I will fix everybody's crown and be like super kind back because you don't know what it's going to lead to. Only good things come from kindness. So I feel like that's just like such a great place to just start.
You focused on inclusivity in your photography, and you are a co-founder of Enchanted Asian Day with Yinzi Wang and Lillian Liu. So, which, by the way, Enchanted Asian Day, for those who don't know, is the second Saturday in June every year. And you just started that a couple years ago. So it's fairly new, but I want to know how it's changed since then.
So it started because of Black Friday. So if you look up Black Fay Day, they are, I think, the month before in May. But my goodness, they were the ones who really started that whole movement of like inclusivity within the fairy tale genre. And the whole concept of inclusivity is one that when I first started taking pictures, I was taking pictures of myself. And then I extended it to taking pictures of my friends, which I think is like an organic sort of journey for most photographers and like baby photographers. Like you shoot your, either you shoot yourself or you just like shoot things or people around you. And so I was shooting, capturing pictures of myself, and then I was capturing pictures of my friends. And then after that, I was capturing people of like models that were in my area. And then it just, and I live in Oxford. And it just so happened that it's very predominantly, Caucasian society, where like in the circle of people that I was within in this my school and etc. And then the models that I was reaching out to and the ones who were like offering their services was like that. And so I never really thought about diversity really, because I was just sort of like shooting friends and then shooting models that were like open to collaborating and stuff like that. Until I started to get comments and like messages from people on my Instagram actually saying, hey, it'd be nice to see different skin tones. It would be nice to see different body sizes. And I was thinking, well, yeah, actually, you're right. It would be nice. And that's when I started to really look at myself and then look at like my work as like a greater message, like, okay, if I'm making this, then what do I want to say? And actually, they're right. There, I didn't even see that there was a lack of this because I was too busy trying to like hone my craft. I wasn't like noticing that at all. And in the moment I started like to pay attention to that, I realized that there was a huge lack of diversity in the overall genre. And I never even noticed it as a person of color myself, because it's just it was so fascinating. That I just didn't notice it. And so then moving forward from that, I've been a lot more conscious about the choices that I make when it comes to the stories that I want to tell and how I want to tell them and who I want to work with, who are, and meeting new people and then inviting new people into my world and then inviting other people into their worlds too. And so we were, it was me and Lillian, it was Lindsay that brought it up actually. It was Lindsay that came across Black Fay Day, and she was the one who introduced it to me when we were, I think, having a conversation. And then she said, right, let's do something. And me, her, and Lillian were excited to get on board to just represent diversity. And because we're all Asians, we thought, well, we'll do an Asian thing. We'll do Enchanted Asian Day. But after, honestly, looking back, I'm like, it just needs to be Enchanted Diversity Day. Because it's like that should be it. It's just, because it is just about diversity and celebrating representation. So how has it changed? Well, I feel like we just stay true to our motto, which is encouraging diversity within our community. And that isn't just diversity in picking the models, it's diversity in sharing the stories of different cultures and connecting with different cultures on an artistic level, because that through art has such an amazing power to connect us to our own shared humanity. And I think that's why artists and musicians and anything in the world of arts, writing, etc., is so revered because it connects us to our shared human experience. All of us know what it's like to be really, really happy and then really, really sad. We all share the feelings. We know what it's like to feel alone, and we know what it's like to feel adrift. It's the human experience is universal. And anything that kind of divides us from one from each other is, well, that's just like bad energy. Because the human experience is just universal. And art has an amazing way of just really connecting us to that experience. And so, yeah, Enchanted Asian Day is literally all about connecting us as all these different colors, types, bodies, stories, histories, cultures, and just showing like, look how cool we are. And especially when we're like out here learning about each other and being inspired by each other and then making, beautiful imagery and stories and memories together. So that's what it's all about.
I love that those conversations are happening now when maybe they weren't before.
It's so true. Isn't it crazy? Like, as a young artist of color, I didn't even think about it. But I think, and that was something that I always come back to. Like, why did I not think about this? Like, why was I, like, my only representation was Jasmine in Disney. And it's like, looking back, I'm like, wow, she really was the only one. But then I never really thought about it because I connected to the strength of Pocahontas. So I never even like looked at the color of the character. I was looking past it to the character of that character. So I was connecting to the strength and freedom in Pocahontas and then the playfulness of Ariel and Little Mermaid. So I never really saw it, but there is so much power to be said for seeing yourself on the screen and seeing yourself represented and seeing your stories represented and seeing your history represented. I think it's just the power of the human connection is in that. And the fact that we are having these conversations now is just a testament to social media. I think it has the work of so many people collectively like creates these shifts in a greater awareness and understanding amongst us all.
The one thing that I can say is within the last couple of years, I've really appreciated things like Encanto or Turning Red coming out, because there are so many little like tidbits of culture within those movies that I may not fully understand, but I appreciate watching it and then going and doing some research, even if it's watching or looking at blogs or forums of those sorts of things and talking about, look at how cool this was that they talked about this specific thing that happened, or like in, I can't even think of it now, so I won't bring it up right now, but it was with Turning Red that it specifically was so interesting to watch the dynamic between generations of individuals and see how that interplay was in that movie and how much there were some similarities between my own growing up with my family and the generational gaps within that, but to see that from a very different perspective. And so in some ways it was nice to watch it be different, but then still be able to look for those unifying features that you were speaking to. So from a storytelling element, it's, for me, that's what I love.
You know, I haven't seen it, but you've inspired me to go check it out.
Oh, you should. It speaks to like 90s culture, or early 2000s. Like there's a Tamagotchi that they just obsess over.
Stop! Do you know what? I saved up for my Tamagotchi, bought it. I had it for 1 week. 1 week looking after this teeny tiny little thing, trying to keep it alive. I felt so cool because I'd saved up for it. And then we had like some family friends that I don't know who their kids were visiting our home, and it disappeared.
No.
Yeah, I will never forget it because I felt so betrayed. I was like, is it even alive? I still think about it to this day.
It might still be alive out there.
That's a guess. My purple and yellow Tamagotchi.
Okay, someone out there, please send Bella another Tamagotchi, please, to replace that.
I mean, it's so funny. Imagine if a Tamagotchi just shows up.
You never know.
Okay. Well, this is really fun. I had no idea that story was going to come out.
See, those are the nuggets that we love to hear on episodes like this. Just the unexpected things.
Oh, it's too funny.
Wonderful. So one thing. Oh, go ahead.
Nope. Go ahead.
One thing that is kind of a pattern with your art is that you do a lot of really floral, delicate, it's gorgeous art. And then you have kind of, at one point you started to introduce stronger characters that have like armor and things like that. And I'm wondering how, if that is a theme that also reflected your personal life as well, or how you, do you also notice that transition in your artwork?
Yes. Okay. So I'll share like how it sort of unfolded. So, you know, I told you I started out with self-portraits, and the self-portraits were pretty much in nature because I didn't have a lighting set up. I didn't, honestly, didn't even have like a proper camera. I was like, using my mom's like point and shoot.
I love it.
And then I like, yeah, you just start with what you have. Like now I would start with my phone because like I have my phone. But like back then I was using the point and shoot, and then I eventually saved up and got the proper camera. And it was everything I did was out in nature, mainly because I didn't understand lighting. And so with every photo shoot, I just tried to get better and better until that time I told you, which was in November 2013. I went to Bali, and it was in Bali that I found my style. And it's so fascinating because looking back, prior to that, everything I'd been making felt very like pieces of a puzzle. And then I took like, but it was like, and I was doing everything. I was doing everything from shooting families, shooting, capturing families, capturing weddings, capturing a bunch of pets, babies, all of it, and just building up my skill set. And then while I was in Bali, I did this retreat that I attended a retreat that a friend was hosting, and it was a 1 month retreat, and there was no pressure to create. It was just to be there and be present. And 2 weeks in, I realized that I was having such great conversations with the girls around me. And each girl had a story, and I thought, oh, I'll take a picture of you. And I captured their picture, and it was like one shot. Like, that was my goal. I was like, I'll just take one shot. But then, and I loved it. I loved what I created. We took one picture, and then I came back to England, and I felt like, what do I do? It just so happened that next to the office where I was working as an architect, the shop along was a florist, and they would discard their flowers every Monday and Thursday. Yeah, every Monday
Wow.
in front of their store to be picked up by the garbage men, the garbage people, the day after. But the bins were not locked, so I would finish.
Love this.
So I would finish work at like 6 o'clock. I'd wait another half an hour until I was sure everybody there had left, and then I would like go to the front and go raid all the flowers that they had been discarding from like weddings they did over the weekend, the
Wow.
week before, and I would just gather them all, chuck them into my car, and run away. And the thing that I learned in Bali, which is taking one picture and like from every shoot, just one shot, is what I brought with me into the new project. And it wasn't even like on purpose. It was just I called it In Bloom because I felt like it represented a few things. In Bloom meant the flowers that were in bloom because I had access to these flowers, so I was using them. It felt like I wanted to connect, use the word In Bloom to connect with myself and share like, through the work that I was create through the pictures that I was capturing with, models around me, reflect myself a bit in them, and then also take one shot from that set that we were making. So the goal was never to like capture a story. It was literally like, we're gonna do a little photo shoot because, I was working from like 9 till 6, so 6:30, then going to my family's business and working there until 7:15. And then I would go pick up the model at 7:30, and then we would run into a field at like 7:45, 8 o'clock, and then I would shoot until 8:20. So, and then the sun was set at 8:30.
Wow.
And so there was only like a 20, 25-minute window. So I was like, we're just going to get one shot.
Wow.
Yes. And then it evolved. So it started off literally with like my friend in a field, like in a kind of fetus thing. And it wasn't on purpose. Looking back, there's so much, it's so fascinating how much of our unconscious slips into the art we create. And that's why I tell people to keep creating art, because even if they're doing it consciously, a lot of the unconscious still filters in and filters through. You're just a vessel, really, for something bigger than you to come through. So if you're writing, if you're singing, if you're drawing, you're like, you should just keep doing it, because it's fast. Like looking back, you'll see patterns that you wouldn't have seen at that time. So it's so wild to me that the first picture that I took was of a girl cocooned surrounded by flowers, as if she was like in her own little nest sleeping. And then after that, she sort of evolved naturally into like, she was like wearing a lace dress because I found it at a thrift store. I'm shooting her against natural landscapes. And then slowly but surely, I'm feeling more comfortable taking pictures like this. And I'm like, oh, actually in my personal life, I'm starting to feel like, you know, a bit of a, like I feel like a bit stronger too, because so many people are showing love on social media. So I'm like, I want to make her look stronger because I'm feeling stronger. So that's when I would like reach out to designers and they would send me armor, like inspired stuff. And so my girl started turning into a warrior. And then at some point I'm slipping into a journey of like from girlhood to womanhood. And I'm starting to really understand what it means like to be a woman and come into your own and into your own like queendom, essentially, that I wanted to cultivate. So suddenly my girls are wearing crowns. Like they're wearing crowns. They're starting to, they're, you know, they're becoming stronger. They're looking straight into the camera. They're facing themselves. They're face, like, it's as if I'm facing myself. Like these are the pictures I'm selecting and sharing and choosing to share. This, it's so fascinating. And then eventually, and then it just starts slipping into something else. Like at the moment, where I am, it's, I feel like I'm seeing a lot of, I've been doing readings to my work, and I feel like I'm understanding my work in a totally different way now.
Okay.
Yeah. And I never used to do, look at them as like readings before, but now when I look at them as readings, it's fascinating what I'm discovering there too. Because now I feel like I've come into my own and being more experimental, being more playful. I want to share not just my story, but I'm trying to share pieces of the people that I'm capturing as well. Mm-hmm. Like, which I'd always been doing, but I feel like I'm trying to come go back a bit and let them come forward more. Yeah.
Okay.
But still within my world, because this is like my the world that I've created and cultivated and that I share, especially on my social media. I get hired for a lot of stuff, but I don't share necessarily all of that. But I do get I do share the work that I create intentionally and then invite people into my world for, so that they can be, you know, I don't know, enchanted by it, whisked away by it, see something within themselves through it, something. Yeah.
I would say that's happening, yes.
Yeah. So that's how it happened. That's like the evolution of it. It was from starting with one picture and then being so conscious that it's only one picture. So then you really think about it. If it's one picture, what does that picture look like? So I'm not just picking a moment now, I'm crafting a moment. And then if I'm crafting a moment, what does that look like? Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm. Trey, I think it's awesome that the sun has hit your window in that way, because it's like you're getting visited by something otherworldly.
A little bit. It's also a little disconcerting right now. So
like
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go adjust that. I know it's cool, but I also don't want to blind any of our viewers right now. So I will be right.
I feel like the universe has entered our podcast. If anybody's listening to this on the podcast, you need to come over to the YouTube channel to see this moment.
I will take care of this. Excuse me.
The rays that are coming are so cool. Yeah, I really want you to leave it, but you do you.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I do. It's cool. It'll pass because the sun, you know, we move. The sun doesn't move. But you know what I mean.
But in sharing of your stories, Bella, I'm really intrigued. If you were to, without anyone having looked at any of your photography before, how would you describe your photography to them?
I think I would describe it as fairy tale, fantasy, probably. Fairy tale, fantasy, feminine, empowering, and escapism. Yeah, because it was always an escapism for me. In the beginning, it was an escapism for me. And then transitioning from it to not be an escapism, but to be something more conscious was an interesting kind of journey. Yeah.
I like that. I really do.
Yeah. I think it can be, I want it to be an escapism for many people, to be fair. I want it to be escapism and inspiring. Like, I want it to inspire people to go out and see things and, like, be their own main character in their own story. Because, like, we just need more of that energy.
Well, one thing your art does that there's not just one word to tie this up, but it's what Tom Paradise said when we had him on the show, and he said art should provoke. And I think your art definitely provokes. There are emotions in every single shot that you've released, and I'm sure they're different for everybody, but we are feeling them.
Yay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like it's a soft provoke because for the longest time I thought I was a tiger in my inner self, but actually I think I'm just like a little tree squirrel or like a mink. So as much as I would like really, really love to like be one of those incredible, that's why I understand the bravery of so many artists who do provoke through their art. Because actually that takes a lot of strength too. Especially in our like social media climate, because social media doesn't necessarily value art that provokes. It values art that generates an engagement that it deems like that it chooses, like non-threatening essentially. So many, I feel like we're losing so many voices in the world of art to the algorithm.
Yeah.
So, and that's a whole conversation worth having, I think, because there's like, it's when I say like so many voices, I actually really think like generational voices of like amazing artists who we're losing to algorithms, including, and I wondered this myself, like including myself, as much as like we have to face ourselves too. And I think that about myself too, that I think, what would I create if I really went for it?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah.
Bella, I don't want to be too political in asking this, but what is a way that we could maybe help, or that you would recommend our audience be supportive of those artists? What are some ways that we can share or help promote those that might be shadow banned? I think is a term that they use on TikTok sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, do you know what? I actually go to a lot of galleries, and I go to them because they're always like really interesting things popping up there. So I think going out into the real world, seeing what shows are on in cities or towns near you, because smaller galleries, they do support a lot of that kind of more challenging, thought-provoking creativity. I think that is a really good way, a good place to first start. Like, yes, love and support your artists on social media, but then go out into the real world and discover all these artists that are, like, you know, trying so hard to get their world seen, their work seen in galleries that are also trying so hard to support them too. And then come back and share, give them love on social media as well. So it, then it's like, I think that's a really good way to start. Because I've been doing that too. Like, I've been loving to go see galleries from the very beginning because I feel like I learned so much from seeing other people's work. And there's so many, and some of that then filters into my own. I think just the more that you're exposed to, it will feed whatever it is that you want to say. So like Houston has a arts district, and they did a amazing like weekend of just like a bunch of artists opening their studios.
Awesome.
It was really, 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 really good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That in art is, it is different in person than it is on a screen.
Yeah. And it doesn't just have to be like art. It could be like going to, you know, theater, going to performances. Just that whole spectrum. It's just so, so fascinating. We went to a night that was hosted at, again, at one of the theaters here in Houston. We went to a cultural night. I hadn't even heard of it. We only went because a friend of ours was in a play, and they curated a show. It was like six It was really cool. It was like six different things were happening, six different performers, and one after the other. And then one had come all the way from like Sierra Leone. Another one was like a story from Pakistan, and then another one was another story, and then migration, and then something else. And it was just so cool. I was like, this is amazing. So the arts overall, like not just photography, but looking at, you know, all sorts of different performances and creators is just a really good way to diversify, I don't know, just the input that we get from all the stories that are in the world. And we're not just like getting it from one source.
Right.
Yeah.
There's, to that point, there are a lot of like vocalists and singers who, they say listening to other people perform the same piece will give you at least 16 different perspectives.
Wow.
There's a kind of a debate going around, and this like resurgence of love for Wicked the musical, because someone illegally, let me say that now, illegally recorded this person inside of a theater performing a version of a line that has been done now for 20 years. And this one person decided to do this line differently and then uploaded it to TikTok, and then now has amassed this discussion of this line, this like 10-second line, and you go, oh, wow, I didn't even think to perform it like that. What? Okay, let's talk about it. How does that fit into the character? What kind of does this do for the characterization? What does this do for the audience? And it promoted this dialogue that up until this point, I'm not sure that many people had really considered.
That is so fascinating. Yeah, see, because we all have our own different perspectives and projections. Yeah, and it's so cool that it sparked a Discord and like a discussion about it. That's really, really interesting.
Just please, just the one thing I do ask from the singer, I know it's really cool, but using it as your sound on TikTok for all of your videos, okay, it gets tiresome, but the Discord that comes with it, love that.
Oh yeah, social media.
Right. Right. You did this collaboration, or it may be a job you were hired for. I'm not sure how this went about, and you're going to have to maybe remind me of the name of it, but there was a fashion company. I want to say it was maybe a Scottish or Irish company, but they did these really ornate, it's like
Irish
jackets.
Dancing dresses.
Say that again?
Irish dancing dresses.
Yes, that's, and it was... like, I wanted to wear one after seeing the photos that came out of that. There's that one image where she's holding the orb.
Mm.
And
yes,
it's like they designed it for you to photograph.
Do you know what? There are so many talented people in the world, and Linda and Rosie are two of them. Like, so, so, so inspiring. They came across me, I'm not entirely sure how, a few years ago, but I honestly feel if they made like a range of jackets, I want one.
Yeah.
But they are, so they're this mother-daughter team.
Okay.
And they, within the Irish dancing community, I believe Rosie's been doing it since she was small, and she travels around the world doing it too. And Linda, the mother, is so talented. She's the one, they both designed it together. I feel like she's the pioneer. Like, she's the one that really like creates a story. So she makes with every, it's almost like couture, every Irish dancing dress that she makes, there's a story.
Oh, neat.
So she'll be like, for this one, I want to bring together like mythology. And then she'll go and do a deep, like I don't know, Celtic mythology. And then she'll go into a deep dive in like Celtic mythology. And then every strand on that dress has been considered. Every pattern considered. There's a reason why like that is like, there's a reason why every shape, every sequin is there. She's really thought about it. And that level of like breaking down all these elements from something that she's so curious about. Like, she's like, I want to do, like, what was it she did for one of them? It was like this jungle jaguar, Mayan, like sort of tr like it was a nod and an ode to it. So she just went down this huge rabbit hole. And I love it because I'm somebody who also, when I get hyper fixated, dive deep into that rabbit hole too. So then she goes and like gathers all that information and like brings it into a piece of art that is the dress. And then to have the honor of photographing those and representing them in a visual way. Oh, yeah. I was like, this is a dream collaboration.
That was, so that was perfection. It was amazing.
Go Thank ahead. You. Yeah. I love telling stories like that. So I feel like I've been really blessed when clients leave their, when clients come to me with their work that they've worked so hard on, and then they also like allow space for me to bring my own interpretation into it too, is like the perfect marriage for something cool to come out of it. So I feel like Linda and Rosie are one of those clients that I just really, really value. And then I had the same kind of thing happen with the Birmingham Royal Ballet, where they had a very like real, like a vision that they had, but then they left actually most of it in my hands.
Awesome.
So they were like, yeah, they were like, oh, we want to capture Beauty and the Beast. What do you need? I'm like, well, we need a library. And then we just, and then I was, and I set up the scenes and everything. They just literally left it in my hands. And I thought, wow, this is like wonderful. So yeah, I really love it when, if you're going to hire an artist, definitely leave room for them to play as well. Because then it's like win-win.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good advice.
So we are in the process of, speaking of like looking for libraries and that background, just as a minor plug, we are looking for places, particularly castles, and recommendations to do like a photo shoot day where we invite a whole lot of creatives and collaborators to come in and join us. Might I ask where you found said library? Because we might be interested in using it.
So this library, unfortunately, I don't even think I'll be able to go back. It's in a private home. Yes, and this particular library is in a place called, I'm not entirely sure if I'm even pronouncing it properly, but it's like Madgersfield House. And it is, yes, it's a private home. They do tours there very selectively on their grounds, and then sometimes inside too. And I believe it's, also, what's his name? Let me quickly Google it, because it's for anybody who follows like Evelyn Wong. Let's see. It was a setting for a very famous story. One second.
I was.
Yeah, it was Evelyn Wong, and it was in his story, *Brideshead Revisited*.
Okay.
And I believe it was also where like the Queen was going to go when like if shit really hit the fan in World War II. So it's like a really famous house. That library is enchanting. But it is a shame that I don't think I'll be able to go back there unless, you know, I make friends with the owners.
You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
No, I had the absolute pleasure to see some of the books in there because I freaking love libraries. They were like first editions of like Waterhouses, like the Water Babies, and it was wild. Some of those first editions in behind the my subject were just like priceless. With the actual illustrations and everything, it was literally like I need to be wearing gloves to be touching these books. Or yeah, something. Because even gloves are not good anymore. So I don't know what you wear.
I don't know either. Right.
Yeah.
Just a total biohazard suit. Just...
Exactly.
Cannot,
right.
Cannot breathe around this. Right. That's,
There are many locations in the UK. There are many in the UK and Northern Ireland and Scotland. Castle-wise, I would find that you would probably have better luck if you look for manor houses. So if you looked for manor houses, a lot of manor houses have even converted into hotels and wedding venues, because you know they have to make their money too. So I feel like some of them are actually open to like the photographers.
Right. We
Yeah,
want to
who
have
want to
like a
host
little
events.
mini weekend festival that includes a little bit of everything we love. So
Yes,
that's
invite me.
yes. Well,
I'll
you're
come.
invited. For sure.
Yay.
Absolutely, you're invited. We'll send you that email as well, that invitation. Actually, we should send out like actual parchment scrolls that are like sealed with a wax seal, and you know, it comes in a box. It's like padded, and yeah.
Stop! Oh my goodness. Bring back the scrolls.
Yes, I'm on board with this.
Hey, it's Trey here from the Modern Romantic Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you so much for listening. Wherever you are listening from, it really means the world to us. Emily and I started this podcast to share inspiring stories and celebrate the many forms that art can take. Having you here along for the ride as we continue that mission really inspires us to keep going. We are constantly blown away by every single listen, so we really mean it. Thank you. Okay, now get back to the interview. This one's good.
I remember once we had a Christmas party a long time ago. I don't remember what year, but we sent out the Christmas party invitations on scrolls like that once, and it was really expensive to do because we didn't think about what it would cost to ship a three-dimensional. Like, we didn't want to crush it, so we couldn't ship it in an envelope. We had to figure out a box, and so some of them we hand delivered, you know, we just set them on the doorstep or whatever, because, but oh, it was so cool. I would do that
Amazing.
again.
Velo, you've talked about how your photography is inspired by fairy tales and by so many other cultures and bringing a lot of diversity. As someone who loves fairy tales, I have to ask, what are your top three fairy tales?
Ooh, good, great question, actually. Top three. So I really love the, I think it's called like Wild Swans by Hans Christian Andersen. The tale of a this yes, a sister with her seven brothers. Yes. And so the brothers get turned into swans, and she wants to turn them back into princes again or human again. And then to do so, she has to knit sweaters with nettles, I believe. And so they're so painful, and her hands burn. And then she knits all the sweaters except for the last brother. She wasn't able to knit his sweater in time because, and she couldn't talk the whole time either. And so they threw her in jail, and they were gonna unalive her as a witch. But she just like stayed to her truth. She knew what she had to do. She knew that even if the world hated her, that she had to make these sweaters for the greater good of her brothers, that they could have a life. And yeah, that's, I don't know why that one really stayed with me. I think it's because of how strong this character was in times of like great adversity. So how everybody was against her, they really all thought she was a witch, but the people that were in her inner circle, her brothers who were visiting her and helping her and like taking her to where the nettles were, they knew the truth, but they couldn't speak. And she knew her truth, but she was not allowed to speak it either. So she just had to show it through her actions. And her actions were knuckling down and making the sweaters. And I think that to me really stayed because I feel like that, like, interesting enough now thinking about it and knowing like how I've evolved as well. I'm like, yeah, I've always like looked at actions way more than words in everybody, including myself, actually. Terribly so, but yeah, like it's just a better indicator of things and how things. It's a better indicator of the truth. The actions will always tell you the truth more than the words, because we can't even like body language. Our body language, which is actions, unconscious actions, will always share a truth that is truer than words. So that's my like favorite one. And also, I think it's because I have two little brothers, so I feel like I connected with her on that level.
I'm glad you didn't say the nettle part was the part you connected with.
Oh, listen, I have tumbled in my fair share of nettles on these photo shoots, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, same. We have a bunch here. Honestly. In the yard, and it's bad, yeah.
Yeah, I once skipped school. In the UK, we say we bunked off school. And so I like hopped over the wall, but I caught my foot and landed in nettles.
Oh, no.
Yeah, full blown. And I was like, and then I had to go hobbling through the front gate of the school back inside to go to the nurse's office. And she was like, how did this happen? And I couldn't exactly tell her. I was trying to escape the afternoon classes. So can we call my mom, please?
I love it. I was escaping.
That's my first story. Then I think it's called Wild Swans. Second one is Ariel. Mm. Like Little Mermaid. I've actually been reading the Hans Christian Andersen one. I've been doing a little audio reading of it because I love listening to audiobooks, and I thought, oh, perhaps I could too read audiobooks. And so I've been doing a little, very quietly by myself, little side project, reading stories out loud. And the first one I'm reading is Little Mermaid. And yeah, fascinating. Yeah, the way it's written, how enchanted she is by this boy and by this other world that she doesn't know about. And I really love her curiosity. And then also the fact that she really knows herself enough to sort of just like choose, like know what she wants. Like everyone is around her saying, you don't, you know, why are you doing this? You don't need to do this. You're going to lose your voice. You're going to lose your, you know, your legs are going to, your feet are going to ache. But somehow this young person, and we look down on young people a lot as well, I believe, for not knowing what they want. They're like, but you don't know, like you don't know the world, but that's just our projection on young people. Actually, most people do know what they want. Like, it's just a case of whether they're supported in what they want. That is usually a bigger difference. So I feel like I was always drawn to her because she, even though against a lot of adversity and many people trying to sway her choices, she always knew what she wanted. And in the Hans Christian Andersen version, she even chose her own death over the death of the person that she, you know, was in love with.
Right.
So I thought it was, yeah, I really liked her, Little Mermaid. And then the third fairy tale, well, look, I had my first two ready to go, so I'm not entirely. I guess the third fairy tale isn't so much as a fairy tale, but the third story that I really love is Fern Gully.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you guys saw it. Yeah, I love Fern Gully. I loved it from the moment I saw it when I was little. I've seen it like 500 times. Also, yeah, like right up there in my, like, in my stories, only because of Krista. Again, it's the cat. I think it's just a woman. I'm just inspired by women. I'm like, inspired by strong women. I think that's literally what it is. Like, Krista is, like, super playful, super magical. She doesn't know her own power. Her grandmother, like, the voice of wisdom is, like, guiding her into her own power. But she's still young. She's immature. She's innocent. She has this, like, innocence about her that is getting her through life. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't really, like, quite understand until she sees a world big, like, the world outside of the bubble that she was grown within.
Mm-hmm.
And then through seeing that, she discovers her own inner strength and the power of her inner strength. And I feel like we can all relate with that, because all of us have so much power within us and so much strength that we only realize when we are pushed into a situation that is the opposite of that, and that really requires it. Then you really realize how strong you actually truly are, and how funny it was that you even doubted yourself in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah.
Those are phenomenal answers. And not to add to your watch list, but on YouTube, you can go and find it's about a 30-minute video from 1967 question mark. It's a Russian adaptation of The Little Mermaid.
Ooh.
They use a lot of the Russian equivalencies of the names. So like the witch becomes a Baba, like a Baba Yaga type of character. But it is some of the most beautiful artwork, some of the most beautiful animation, and it still holds up to this day,
Wow.
almost 60 years later.
I will check it out. Thank you so much for that recommendation.
Absolutely.
And I think everybody's homework should be to go watch Fern Gully and catch back up on that.
I mean, listen, even just for the music alone.
Yeah. And the visuals, I always thought that it was kind of rich.
Oh, it's
You
so
know?
rich. There's a song in Fern Gully, and it's cool. I don't even. The first line is like, "It's raining like magic." And do you know what? Every time it rains, I think of this song.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's raining like magic. Like, I don't hate rainy days because of that song.
I
Isn't
love
that wild?
that. That is wonderful. That is how it should
Yeah.
be.
Yeah. I'm like, it's funny what stays with you. Yeah.
It's raining, it's magic. Okay, you have to go watch Fern Gully so that you can get that song in your head forever. Forever. Well, growing up though, my sister always loved frogs. That's like her favorite animal on earth. And so,
Yeah.
growing up, rain, frogs love rain. They come out in the rain a lot. And so growing up, rain was kind of a fun. We'd always go out frog hunting and catch frogs and hold them and look at them and talk to them. 'Cause that was our thing. So rainy days were, they may not have felt magical. I guess looking back, maybe they were, but it was always like, because frogs loved rain, still a positive thing.
Yeah.
So, but I love the Fern. I forgot about the Fern Gully song. I'm gonna have to go. I'll have to show her that. I wonder if she's seen Fern Gully. Now there's a whole thing we're gonna have to do. So, good.
There you go. There
Awesome.
you have it.
So, you do a lot of educating. You've done videos for various. I don't know if Creative Live is one of them, but
Yeah.
organizations like that that do educating and classes and things like that. And you have your own YouTube channel and things like that. You've shown how you work and what you do. I feel like you give a lot of advice to people who just start out. You have a Facebook group, things like that, and even your blog and website, people look to you for how, and you've actually been copied quite a bit. And I think it's definitely something like they love your work and want to do that too. And I've never seen anyone copy it in a way that I would say, I've never been confused, like, oh, that's Bella. Oh, no, it's not. I think it's,
Yeah.
but, hopefully that's a form of flattery. But you have so many people that look up to you and so many people who seek out, advice from you and education from you.
Yeah. Yes, I educate and I have my own platforms, and I think that everybody who is on a journey should certainly do something similar. I actually recommend it. You should definitely share if you're creating art and sharing it on social media, anything that you're learning, especially now more than ever, if you can, share it. Like, share that information because you're also inspiring through your own journey many, many other artists. So, in terms of being copied, I thought it was fascinating because when I first started doing what I did, I had artists that I looked up to. And so I noticed that a few things, because there is no such thing as art that has not been influenced by in some way from a multitude of sources. So when I see people who create work like I do, and I've seen many, because come on, there's only so many ways you can shoot a girl in a flower bush. I mean,
Yeah.
it's okay. And that's a thing that I never that I've always wanted to say. Like, if unless it's like literally full-blown same model, same styling, same this, same that, then we're going to have a conversation, because those are copying choices.
Yeah.
But if you're copying like a style, then that's just part of your artistic journey. Because every artist evolves through copying. So even in the past, when you're looking back at like these painters, they're literally painting what their masters were painting. And then they teach, like the master teaches the students their technique and literally how they see and do things. And the student takes that information, tries to, you know, Jimmy rig it into their own, and then they teach their students as they get older. And that's how we've always learned. So mm-hmm. I've never, in my fairy tale and fantasy community, I've seen so many work that I can see very easily have been influenced by my own, but I have been so thrilled because I know that I am a part of somebody's creative journey by through copying me, through taking on board things that I recommended or things that I do or things that I, the way I style or the way I see things, and then bringing their own flair into it, which I can see, which happens naturally anyway, because the more you create, the more you're going to want to put yourself into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then leads them to their own artistic expression. And it is so wonderful to see, because it's just like, okay, if I'm going to put out beautiful things and that inspires you to put out beautiful things, mm-hmm. then the world is just becoming a more beautiful place. Like, and how is that like a bad thing?
Yeah, that's a wonderful attitude and outlook to have on it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I think it's only when I've seen a few that were literally like really like copy. Like they've literally taken the same pose, the same this, the same that. And then I would never, ever message them from a place of like emotion, because if I like go, if I feel like hurt and upset, then I'm going to just not convey properly what I mean to say. I always message with such politeness to be like, I just want you to understand that this is how it feels for me. And you have so much talent because you've done this already. So you need to trust in your talent more. Yeah.
So, wow, that's so amazing that you said that way.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, because you could be angry, you could be all of the emotions, like you said, and you might still go through that, but your approach to them is one that's definitely more encouraging and loving than probably even they would expect.
Because they're doing it to express something. I will never, ever diminish anybody's will to express themselves through art. It is an outlet. It is an outlet for so much of our human experience. And honestly, we need more of it, because if we don't have it, then people will use different outlets like that are more detrimental to their own like psychology and physical health. So I will never, ever. And I feel like I do try and like convey that to my audience, that any form of artistic expression, however, should be encouraged and then guided, because they may not have even had that guidance.
Right.
So yeah, we can't choose what other people do. We can only choose how we, our own actions. And I feel like if we choose to operate from a place of like love, compassion, and kindness, then we inspire others to hopefully make the same choices for themselves as well. So I actually had to learn a lot of this as you slip into adulthood. And I feel like, honestly, a lot of that growth has come from Instagram. from my getting on like self-therapy talk. But I will never, ever squash another artist. I know how far I've come through support. So I feel like only through support can people find their own path. What would I recommend to people who are diving into photography and want to find their own style? It's literally start with what you can. So yeah, if you find like a project that inspires you, find an artist that inspires you, look into why that is. Like, what is it that you're drawn to? And I always recommend doing a Pinterest, because or even if you save on Instagram, or like a folder of like collected inspirations, because you'll find that you're not going to just be picking other artists, but throwing things in there that actually really inspire you. So for example, like designer dresses that you've seen, or like this like illustration that another person has done that you think is interesting, or this thought-provoking quote that you read, or like this song or lyrics from the song that just really feels something to you, throw it in that folder. And then when you go through that folder, or you go through that collective of like little curated collection that you've made for yourself, you'll start, it's almost as if you can zoom out of your own head for a bit and see what it is that you're drawn to. So you may realize that, oh, I'm actually drawn to like a lot of like deeper, darker emotions, and I thought I was a pastel girl, you know. And then that can give you like an insight into what it is that you're attracted to, what it is that your style is, and then start putting pieces of that into what you do, and voila, over time you keep practicing, you become good at what you practice, your style will naturally evolve. It took me 7 years.
Wow.
So I tell people it will take you time to get to know yourself and get to know your art. So just give yourself the opportunity of practicing and showing up consistently for yourself, and then your story will unfold itself naturally, and you will evolve and you will find your own style.
Solid advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trey's clapping. Yay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's...
Sometimes I don't always know what to say when faced with really good advice, because the one thing that I've been that I love about this particular interview is how well you articulate these items. Sometimes artists, I find, and even myself included, have difficulty articulating where we get inspiration from, or recommending things to other creative individuals, but you have such a fluidity of thought and such just a natural ability to converse with others and truly inspire them. So me clapping is just trying to say I support that, and also I am stunned by just the unbelievable answers that you've been giving.
Oh, thank you, Trey. Yeah, I feel like I wouldn't have grown as much as I wouldn't have grown into the version of me that I am now had it not been for the gift. Like, it's the gift that photography gave me, but then also the people around me, and then the people online who are, you know, choosing to be a part of my community. Like, I really, really, really love them so much because of the support and the kindness and the kind words. So, for example, I actually took, I slammed into burnout. Like, I had been working quite hard, saying yes to many things. A lot of amazing opportunities had been coming my way in 2016, 2017, right up until 2019, like speaking at conferences, invited to workshops. And I just said yes to everything because I knew that it was, you know, I don't know when it was going to come around again. And I was just going to say yes. And I slammed into burnout, both physically, with my health as well, mentally with my creativity, emotionally, because it was just, you know, I was just overwhelmed with the many things happening. And I took some time out, and then I was getting messages from people because I'd been quiet on social for like months at a time. And I was getting messages going, hey, just to like check in, like, I know we don't know each other personally, but just to check in, like, are you okay? And yeah, and like, and I'd be like, oh, I'm just a bit tired at the moment. And they'd be like, oh, you know what? Take your time. We'll be here waiting for you.
Aww.
And I just thought, this is just so cool. So yeah, I feel like that's why I'm able to show more authentically as myself, because of the grace I'm given by many people. And even if we don't align in some ways, choosing to message me from a place of kindness, then it's just like, that's just for, like, I'm like, yeah, we're gonna be friends because you're choosing to.
Of course.
Your choice is the same more than anything mm-hmm. else. So yeah, we may, yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
So, and you came back though, and you continued to do photography.
Yeah.
And so what? Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So It was essentially last year. No, not last year. I never stopped taking pictures. That's the thing. So I just stopped sharing them.
Oh.
I think that's what happened. I got really, I had to like break apart a lot of things within myself to dissect what was happening. And one of them was imposter syndrome. It was like a huge thing that had to be dismantled. Another thing was, and imposter syndrome is not just like not being good enough. It's just like, it's almost like not being good enough for yourself. Because essentially, like that was the biggest battle. It wasn't even like showing off other people. I had that fear, but the fear that was bigger than all of that was just not showing up authentically as myself. And then I was like, do I even know myself? So that was like a whole thing. And then, yeah, but through it all, I kept taking pictures. I was at one point, I was really scared to share on social media because of the number game, like the likes, like that does a number on you too. Like I had, because the algorithm, because I hadn't shared for so long, the algorithm was no longer my friend and no longer supporting me. And so facing the likes, even though they're not an accurate representation of the value of whatever it is that you're sharing, was a battle that I had to overcome as well. And I feel like a lot of young artists have that, and not young, a lot of artists in general, the algorithm is not our friend unless we're consistently uploading regularly and consistently uploading what it wants you to upload at that time, like trending topics, like how it wants you to engage with like trending sounds, trending verbiage, hashtags. It's like a whole career on its own.
Yeah, that's if you're already an artist, you're also a business person, and now
Yeah.
you have this marketing beast that is social media to try to figure out how to handle too. I could see why you would maybe not post for a while.
And it blows my mind because I always think it's because of amazing artists that that these platforms are able to attract so much usage because people love it, to connect with people that make them feel something. And you're treating your artists so badly. And like, though, that's just a shame for us all, isn't it? It's a shame for the people who support us, and it's a shame for us on the other side who are creating. So, like, there's no one's a winner here. Come on.
Yeah, it does feel like they would take the time to make sure their artists are better treated so that they by their algorithms, so that they would not lose them or cause them to burn out for all of the little trends and things they have to keep up with in order to
Yeah.
maintain the momentum.
But you know what? It makes us stronger. I'll give you that. We are all becoming multifaceted and
Right?
amazing people. Yes.
You said imposter syndrome, and that surprised me because it was actually a question I was thinking about asking you, because probably most people look at you and don't think, I mean, other people have imposter syndrome. I'm just going to say it. Other people have imposter syndrome because of you. And not
I'm
because
so sorry.
you're doing so, your art is so amazing, right? So it's like, how can I exist in this bellicotech world? You said the key to it, which was showing up for yourself. And that's kind of also the key to imposter syndrome. Like, you might see where you want to be and you're not there yet, or you might see where mentally you can't. I call it like a bottleneck. Like, I have these ideas and dreams and all these things, and like, I don't know how to get them out into art. And so there's this like hiccup of, I'm gonna struggle with this one. It's like not having the right word to translate from one language to another.
Very true. So I feel like in answer to that, there's a few things that might help, and I feel like they helped me too, which is looking into creative exercises. So there's a book called The Artist's Way, and I feel like many artists talk about it, and they talk about it for a reason because there are some really good exercises in there of just getting some of the thoughts from. Especially, I feel like many people who have a lot of feelings are big overthinkers as well. We live in here so much that sometimes, by the time it comes to like living out here, it's just you're done because you've already lived so much in your own mind. So getting things out of our mind into the physical realm, the Artist Way has some really great exercises and tools that I feel that many people could benefit from. And then in terms of like figuring out how your, like, what is your medium? Like, is it writing? Is it something that you know? Is it something that you don't know? The only way that you'll ever know that is by trying a bunch of different things, going to different classes, and seeing what's in your neighborhood, seeing what community is doing. So, for example, in the summer, I did a bunch of life drawing classes. I went to a class to play with clay, and I realized clay is not really my thing, but I love it very much, but maybe just for play. Like, I love to play with clay, but it's, I don't feel like it quite aligned with my way to, like, express. But again, many things do start from a place of play. So maybe if I did it long enough, perhaps it could evolve into something. So you see, you just have to try a bunch of different things. And also reaching out to people who are inspiring you, because you never know what kind of advice they might share. So I get so many messages from young artists who are interviewing me for like their school or their whatever things they are doing, they interview, and essentially using these interviews as a way to, like, you know, ask me all the questions. I don't mind answering them because, again, some people just don't have that person in their life that they can ask these questions to.
Right.
So reaching, and also don't expect people to reply back to you, because I do know many artists don't have that time either, because all of our plates are full from the variety of things that we're juggling. But reaching out doesn't hurt. Reaching out to people to second shoot with them, to assist with them, especially if you're in the photography genre, assisting with them, you learn so much. Going to workshops, going to retreats, looking up different artist retreats, because at different artist retreats, there'll be different people from, I guess, other genres. And then that might influence how you see the world and start to see yourself as well. Imposter syndrome, you're right, does present in a variety of ways, and it's so complex. And I guess in a case, the biggest battle all of us have to face with that is what is the biggest thing that it is for you? So in my case, it was a case of like self-doubt and not feeling aligned with myself and wondering if I even had any value in this world. And I feel like these were topics that I'd grappled with that had led to me creating in the first place, because I was escaping.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was slipping from a place of escape, using art as an escapism, to using art as a form of self-expression and a conscious choice of like a voice that I want to present to the world, I had to face many of the things that came up in imposter syndrome spectrum.
And I love that you said that it changed from a vehicle of escapism in towards an action for your voice.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a little bit about diversity and making sure that your art is diverse and that we have a diverse spectrum of individuals involved in our artistic projects. And I think to anyone who's listening, one thing that I can say, having done the podcast now, even speaking with you today, is in your imposter syndrome should be faced at some point, but there's always space for every single artist. Do not ever think that you do not have a voice at the table. You do. You absolutely do. So do not ever discount how large your voice actually is. It is not measured in Instagram likes. It's not measured in Instagram shares or TikTok likes or stitches or whatever the hell platform you're on. Your voice matters regardless. So please continue making whatever art you are currently doing, because if it changes one person's life, you've influenced the world. And that's as much as anyone could ever hope for.
That was awesome.
And very, very well said. It's also worth noting that you can't like ever trust these social media platforms, because they all have their own agendas. And you have to play their game. And sometimes many people give up a lot of themselves and their to play the game. And that's why I talked about how as a generation, like our my generation, the next generation, the generation below them, we're going to lose so many artists, I feel, who haven't even had a chance to nurture their own authentic voice because they have been nurturing the algorithm voice. So,
that is really well said and sad, but potentially accurate. And I hope that they see that they're, like what Trey said, their value does not lie in that.
Yeah, but also, do you know what? Thinking about it, I think that as long as you're sharing something that aligns with you, no matter how it does present itself, if it aligns with you, then you're not, then go for it. Like if you need to adapt and it's aligning within you, then go for it. Because your trainer is absolutely correct in that every voice does count. Every voice mm-hmm. matters. And just like there are no wrong paths in life, because essentially everything that we learn along the way is just like another thread in the tapestry, like the tapestry of our life. We are here in this moment in time, in this point in time, in this society, in this landscape, for a reason. So use whatever you have, whatever tools you have to get your insight out into the world. Yeah. Yeah. And if that means you do got to play the game, then play the game. Yeah. So I guess, see, like, art, there's no right or wrong answer. This is why I love art so much. it's literally like one of my favorite things. Everyone's like, oh, but I don't know if it's right or not. It doesn't have to be right. That's the fun thing about it. Just make it, get it out, move on.
That's why I love this podcast. And I'm so glad Emily convinced me to do this podcast is for that reason. Like, is to get art out there and to share art. Because in a way, this is our art and this is our gift back to the artistic community, mm-hmm. is to help promote these discussions of artists who exist here in the world. We could be here for an hour and I could get onto a major diatribe
We're
about
gonna
that.
Have to have a whole nother show about that.
But the one thing that I want to make sure that that our listeners know about, two things. One, what are you currently working on that you'd like to share with us now?
Mm-hmm. I would say, so I'm currently working on a limited color turning collection.
Awesome.
So I have a shop where I sell my color turning actions, my digital backdrops, video content on how people can color grade and color turn their images and retouch their images. Basically, it's a little side project that I started years ago that has had not one, not two, but three brand name changes.
One of them fairly recently.
Literally, let me tell you that I just go for it. And I'm a very simple girl. So the first name was Fine Art Actions because, mm-hmm. you know, it was just actions. It was Photoshop Actions. That's what they're called. The presets in Photoshop, they're called Photoshop Actions. So it was literally called Fine Art Actions. Like, okay, we're turning into Fine Art Color Turning Presets. And then the second name, and then I was like, no, do you know what? I want to sell things color. Like, there's more things in the color landscape. Like, I have all these videos that I want to make. I want to make a course. So I'm like, we need to change the name. So we changed it to the Color Lab. And then I was like, wait a second. I love the whole creative process. I want to share more about this creative process. I feel like I've learned more about lighting, about posing, about how to guide a photo shoot, how to realize a vision from start to finish. That doesn't just come under color. So now we have a third name. And the third name is Only the Curious, which I feel like is so much more in alignment with myself, with the community, with the ethos of, like,
yes,
the energy that I want to have in this space. So it's called Only the Curious. It's onlythecurious.com, and I share my color turning actions, and we do blog posts, and we do interviews with different artists. It's like a whole thing. It's just for people who are just curious about things. So the project that I'm working on currently is making a limited edition collection for it, because one of the things that I wanted to do was have these little limited edition runs. So almost like, you know how in fashion you have spring, summer, and then autumn winter collections. So I wanted to do that only for our college only collections. Like have a autumn winter, spring summer, and I'm working on the autumn winter one. And then that's releasing at the end of November, so in about 2 weeks.
When I saw your announcement that you were, I couldn't tell right away if you were starting something new or if it was an addition to the Color Lab. But when I saw the name Only the Curious, I was like, yes, this is wonderful. What a perfect name.
Do you know what? It was, we'd been dancing around the word curio. It took a minute because whenever it comes to like writing, like making up a name, like figuring out our name, we had a whole plethora of words. Like everything from Elysium to just beautiful, pretty words. And then I kept thinking about Alice in Wonderland. And I live in Oxford. And Alice in Wonderland was written in Oxford, inspired by, Alice Little and then the professor and then all sorts of stories. Like it's an Oxford story. And then curious and curiouser and curiouser was also like one of my favorite phrases when I was growing up, because I'm like, haha, curiouser and curiouser. Like I would always like, anytime somebody told me about something interesting that made me think, I'd be like, haha. So I was dancing around this word curious, and we were thinking curio for a really long time. Turns out many things are called curio.
Oh.
But when I wrote up like a bunch of phrases and I circled only the curious. And then a friend, and I sent it to like my team. I have a small but really lovely team, and they picked it too. And I was like, you guys, I knew we were a good team, but we're on the same level here.
That's so awesome.
It's so nice. So nice.
That's how it
and
should
everybody's
be.
Been, yeah, and everybody's like, got it. I think that was the whole point. Like, I wanted to get it myself, and I wanted other people to get it. And it's like it's a great name. People just get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And second, so that people can stay in touch with Only the Curious and also with the amazing projects that you are doing, what are some places that our listening audience can keep up with you?
I would recommend a couple of platforms. So Instagram is where I'm the most active. We have a Only the Curious Instagram handle, which is only.thecurious, and we're featuring artists who are using our products and creating. We've been already creating a community there anyway, and our community is really amazing. So that is like the space where we share all of the news. I have my own personal Instagram where I share what our community is doing on Only the Curious, but then I share what my own personal community is doing as well in the fairy tale and fantasy genre. So Instagram as well is where I recommend. And then I have groups on Facebook and a group on both, two groups on Facebook. So the group for the fairy tale community, which is called Fairy Tale and Fantasy with Bella Kotak, that's on Facebook. And then I have the Only the Curious Collective group on Facebook as well. And the groups are more like intimate, because that's where you share like the behind the scenes. You can have like a proper conversation because you share a post and you can go into the comments. And I feel like a lot of our community connects in the groups. So when they're in different cities or they're visiting different places, they can be like, hey, I am in, you know, New York. Are there any New York people here? Can we do a meetup? You know, that's the whole point of these groups, is so that our community can connect with each other on a really like organic level. So yeah.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful, the Fairy Tales and Fantasy with Bella Kotak is the group I've been in for a while. And it is, it's a feast for the eyes.
Definitely.
And it's a feast for the soul as well.
Yeah. I feel we're doing at the moment creative challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So we did them over lockdown, and I felt like they gave people like such a nice energy and like thing to do, little projects that they could just jump in and out of. And every month we had a theme. So we have a theme for November. We had Spooktober just passed, and that was really fun. The blog post for that is coming out soon on the Only the Curious blog. And then the theme for this month, November, is in the fairy tale group, in the Facebook groups. In both of those groups, I've shared the theme. So, yeah.
Bella, if I didn't say this enough, you are incredible. You are such an amazing speaker. You are such an amazing artist. I didn't get a chance to say this during the episode, but as I was scrolling through, sorry, I got distracted by Emily's podcast kitty. Scrolling through the Instagram, your personal Instagram, I am, yes, Velvet, I agree. I want to say how much I can see the architecture influence in yours, because there is such a balance of art against other things, or the way that your models are framed, either by what they're wearing and the scenery behind them, or what they're enveloped by in some capacity, is really such a treat to walk through. I want to say that one of my favorite images is actually of the one that you did for Don Quixote, the ballet. Oh. When I saw it, I thought it was actually going to be the story of Carmen from like Georges Bizet's Carmen opera. But I'm delighted that it was also for Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. But that is one of my favorites, just from one, the framing, the intimacy of those two models that you have.
The way that,
yes, that is one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that, Trey. That's really, really nice to hear that that's a favorite as well. I love, there was the shot that I loved was when, I can't remember her name, but the ballerina did the split as she jumped.
Yeah. Oh.
And then I added a skyscape behind her, and it was all like golden tones against the pop of red of her tutu. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Working with ballerinas is so cool. So I did ballet when I was a child. I did it for like 12 years.
Okay.
And yes. And then I stopped. I wanted to be a ballerina. I was like, ballerina. Among the many, many other things that I wanted to be. But it was fascinating because I feel like a lot of the things that I learned during ballet, especially when it comes to like having like a grace and softness, mm-hmm. I bring into my photography and how I pose the models. So when it came to working with ballerinas, it was wonderful to not have to really pay attention to their hands because they knew their hands.
Yes.
Yes,
like that's... their hands are always perfect.
Yeah, they know where each finger is and what it's doing as they're right.
Mm-hmm. Everything, your whole history feeds your art. Everything you've read, everything that you have watched, everything that you, every class that you took. So all my ballet dancing classes come into this. Funny that you mentioned about architecture, the things I learned in architecture, such as so for example, when you're designing a space, you're designing behavior. Mm-hmm. So good design space inspires good behavior. And so a badly designed building or a complex will inspire bad behavior because it just has more nooks and crannies and shadows. And you know, there's just more thought going into that. So therefore, when I'm like designing a piece of work, I'm thinking about where is the person who's viewing this picture, where are their eyes going to first? How do I lead their eye down the scene? It all comes into it. So it's so fascinating that you brought it up. There's a balance as well. Like if a window is over here versus over here, what does that do to the balance of that room, of that space?
There's also one of like the flowers. Okay, how do I describe this? The model is center. However, there is an askew. What I'm going to describe is explosion of flowers with like almost at points of a star going out farther to the side of her with like some mini ones going up, but it's at a slight angle to things. And for me, it's such a feat of, okay, I look at the backdrop, but then I'm instantly drawn to the flowers, and then it's drawn back right to the model in the center. So it's, for me, that's the first image I think of when you're talking about what does my eye go to first and how do I lead them through this picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, my ADD brain loves being led to things.
I feel like anything that has conscious thought put into it can, leads the eye. So, for example, I was looking at there was a YouTube video where this girl was talking about how she styles herself. And again, she was using the same thought process. She was like, where do I want people to look at me first? And then how do I lead them down the scene? I thought that was very interesting because I was like, oh, I'm doing this for my photography, but she's right. I could do this for other things in life too. So when I enter a room, where do I want people or myself to look at what I want to notice first? And then how do I lead, like, what supports that? Yeah.
Fascinating.
I think it's a good little thing to keep in mind because I've been doing it for my photography. And now I'm like, oh, maybe it's just like a conscious thing. I need to just be anything that I do now with, even when I'm writing a piece of text, what is the message of that text? And like, what are the words that are standing out in that text? Because it's the words that are standing out that are going to lead the flow of that text and then the message, the overall message then. Yeah, just thinking about it.
That gives me a lot to think about, even in the things that we do with the podcast, or some of the like script writing things that I'm wanting to do for my own YouTube.
Right.
But it is so clear that you bring such intentionality to things. It speaks to your art. It speaks to the phenomenal episode that you have given us here today. So from us, and I'm sorry, Emily, if I'm speaking on your behalf as well, but really, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your amazing story and your incredible art with us.
Yeah, thank
Thank you
you.
so much for inviting me. I
It
really
was
appreciate it.
such a treat. Thank you so much.
Oh, this is great. Great energy.
Yeah, thank you. You're amazing. And we'd love to have you back sometime. We can talk more about all the things.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much to everyone listening too. Like you stayed this far.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you everyone for being here. We wouldn't I don't know, we might still be here without an audience because we get a lot of out of this too, but it sure does help and we appreciate everybody's support.
Thank you everybody, and I'm going to close this out with a quote from Cinderella, one of my favorite adaptations. Have courage and be kind. Bye
It's a good
everybody.
one. Bye.